So, AI.
You guys obviously have released a lot of features and functionalities that have used AI to make things easier, like native language searching, things like that.
Yep.
And I think that it is the most transformative feature release in video from a usage standpoint.
Yep.
I feel that's ever been released, and that's a strong statement, right? But if you think about why we're installing video, it's so that you have a record of it.
Sure.
And the challenge has always been trying to find it when you need it quickly and efficiently.
Yeah.
And up until native language searching, about the best you could get was maybe tiling and controlling how many seconds are in each tile. So being able to go back in and search for a white Model Y Tesla last Tuesday around 3 o'clock.
Yep.
And see everything that looks like a Tesla around that time, right? Is like major game changer.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so I guess I want to start with, you know, what's your take on that?
Yep.
And then the bigger picture, how do we keep control over AI? As because if we see how fast that it's adopting and how it's changing, and obviously being privacy concerned and everything else, like how do we wrangle that in but still continue to innovate?
Yeah. So I'll rewind back a little bit. For the industry's used AI in multiple facets even before, you know, language search, right? Natural language search. I think Verkada uses AI in multiple facets, from the processing on the camera and what it detects to the searching capabilities in the cloud and so forth. So like there's a lot of things behind the scenes that people don't know that use AI, by the way.
Right.
And they're not as sexy as the features, but they are the things that provide optimizations that result in the scalability of Verkada's product.
Even the accuracy of detection.
The accuracy of detection. And, yeah. Should we store this? Should we not store this? Should we hyper zoom this?
Right.
So that we have really good quality shots of this thing. There's a lot of cool things that are happening behind the scenes that utilize AI. And then you kind of you have the descriptive AI that you're talking about, which is like, hey, this is a Model S, whatever. And that was readily available, I guess, to other manufacturers in the past. Maybe not easy to use, but like technically the feature existed. It's like, this is a white car. I'm interested in that. I think where Verkada did a really good job is implementing ways to take that information and be able to easily use it at scale, whether it's be notified when this car comes anywhere at LPR and so forth. We've always wanted to speed investigations. And we've always wanted to get from what seemed to be hours, by the way, at the beginning. Sometimes infrastructurally, there was a problem to even be able to search things. But then once you did get into your video management software, how do you kind of like search things faster and faster? And we went from hours to minutes with Motion Grid Search and the easy capabilities of how you can kind of stream through a clip real fast and be able to see it and then use it and share it. To what you mentioned today, which is LLM models, which do require the cloud from the aspect of all the data that's necessary, the models that we're using, and it moves it into seconds, right? And you mentioned a particular situation, which is like still kind of in the descriptive realm, but we can actually search for things that are way harder to search for with it and be notified when they are detected, so you can actually get some proactive mindset.
Right.
In getting real-time notifications. I think it's pretty incredible. That's the first step of AI. By the way, I think there's way more.
Yes.
The fact that a human is doing it is also in question.
Right.
Why is a human investigating?
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think you'll see agentic AI start playing a role. You'll also see training models on what the customers want playing a role.
Sure.
So I think there's a whole other set of AI that's about to come to this industry, and Verkada is thinking very much about it.
Yeah.
So I think we're gonna see a lot of that. Now, you've kind of seen when we release a feature like the LLM models, we also add moderation to it because you don't want to have people type in potentially something that's racist or anything of that sort. So in every powerful feature, you will see Verkada build accountability on the other side. Privacy is one of the stipulations that we inherently drive in our vision. And so whether it's facial recognition, by the way, as well, right? Like we put accountability on what can be done. And I think it's a very daunting task. Like but it is inherently by design what we want to do.
Right.
And so you'll see that we'll figure out like different levels of accountability of how to utilize it. And I think by not sharing it across multiple, like this idea of mass surveillance, we don't want to have. And so that's like the first fundamental thing is mass surveillance shouldn't be a thing in a democratic country. And so we want in the same thing, same mindset is true for every feature we build. How do we prevent it being taken advantage of by bad actors?
Yeah.
But it's not an easy task. I think we did a good job on the LLM side. I think there's a lot more we can improve.
That's awesome. So kind of triggered a thought here and just in general of you talking about the mass surveillance.
Yeah.
What's your take on products like Motorola's Command Central Aware or Fusus and these, you know, they call them real-time crime centers, but they seem to be connecting more and more private cameras, all of the city cameras, all of the Homeland Security cameras and everything all rolling up into one, you know, minority report room, right?
Like, yeah.
What's your thought and vision on that?
Me personally, I don't know Verkada's vision exactly on that. I think my view is in general, I think Verkada shouldn't build that.
Right.
If there is a different solution that a law enforcement wants to use, that's fine. I think even as we look at, you know, the new products we will build for cities, we don't want them to be sharing it across state lines. If that means we lose some business, that's fine.
Yeah.
But that might be actually the reason why we win business. Right. Because a city wants, you know, the citizens of a city want to know that it's not being mass populated everywhere.
Right.
Fuses, you know, if a law enforcement uses Fuses, then there's a different situational problem that should be happening there potentially, not at Verkada.
Right.
So that's my view. Now we have integrations with those systems.
Yeah. What's interesting is they're going a different direction now too, right? Like, so Fuses has released Fuses VMS and trying to be the one-stop shop for everything.
I think there's going to be a crossroads at some point for sure. And that's true for a lot of different products, right? Like we're going to reach an area where we play, where they play, and there's going to be overlap where we will compete. And we've seen that happen multiple times for sure.
So I did have a question just kind of like a bigger picture of you know, your team specifically.
Sure.
I saw an article that you guys, I guess a blog post you put out about your, I think they're called MDMs.
MDRs.
MDRs, yeah. Right? And how they were able to do some, you know, record number of cold call touch points, demos, were able to do so much more than an AE. As far
or
as
than an SDR would do.
Or an SDR, right? So, like, if that's the case and that's the data, it's your own data you put out there, like, is that team going to be further enhanced and possibly replace some others? Or
we're always debating that because Verkada is actually a very decentralized company. I don't know if you noticed that, but like sales has a recruiting team on its own. Marketing has its own recruiting team. Like, and so that's true also for our development reps. Like the marketing development reps are basically an SDR team within marketing. We have our own development reps. Sales has its own. And that might not make sense long term. Like at some point, we might have centralized it. I think what makes the MDRs unique and why they can coexist with SDRs today is what we really placed on it, and this is kind of the mentality of Verkada in general, is always thinking first principles on the problem. An SDR is really focused on a set of accounts that an AE might want to penetrate into. But that's not necessarily the most efficient way for an SDR to prospect. Because if they had more accounts, they might be able to actually find more opportunities, more deals. But it might not be the specific accounts that the AE wants. What we did in marketing is we decided, let's make the MDR the most efficient they can be. And let's figure out a way to optimize for their time. And what it does is it means that, like, you basically have a growth marketer sitting next to that, to multiple MDRs, and automating a bunch of their stuff. From the emails they send out, an MDR never really sends an email, the growth person does. To the automation of, you know, what is the content that's on the email, to what's the actual, everything is built through systems and growth, not the MDR. The MDR then breaks in from that point on, and that reverses the ability for an MDR to do way more. So an MDR can get to sometimes even, I've seen 100 opportunities a month. It's pretty remarkable. Usually 50, 40, 50. An SDR generally gets to 10, 15, 20. But we use a lot of different AI tools now. I've seen some emails that we build with AI, and we're only experimenting right now, that are so personalized to that person that even an SDR doing 30 minutes of research would not be able to construct.
Yep. And I've seen a couple of those tools. So yep. I think you guys have even, you know, packaged up some of the stuff you're doing.
Yeah.
Created a product with a separate company that you're releasing. And we've obviously played with those tools.
Sure.
And it's really interesting. And I think that that's what, as a whole, the market doesn't understand about Verkada. Is at the end of the day, you guys run like a software company.
100%.
You are utilizing all of the big software tools. You are running playbooks just like a software company, your comp plans, your culture, your environment, everything in there. And so while you might take some heat from trade rags in our industry or whatever, news publications, the reality is you're just running a software company. And these are the same tactics, techniques that all of those companies use to build extremely high performing sales teams, right?
Yeah.
And so I just think a lot of people don't understand that. But what they really don't understand is how you're feeding all that information, right? Like, you know, just the quality of the data that you guys are consuming about information, territories, territory maps, the mapping of it, AI tools to send, campaigns to come back in, being able to track all of that data and the performance and get down to metrics on each one of those employees.
Efficiency of what we should kill, what we should double down on is very much at heart. The data-driven culture that is there. I would actually say, you know, forget about the industry. Just as a software company, we're pretty close to the forefront of that, like, standard deviation. Like, we're at the edge of, we sometimes build our own tools for the marketing team, for the sales team.
Seen them.
And we always debate, do we spin them out into another company because they're so great?
Right.
And so then you kind of put that back to the current industry that isn't even at the forefront of where most software companies, how they operate it. So it's a very large,
very big gap.
Very big gap.
Yes.
So it's not just our product. Our go-to-market is pretty obsessive and innovative.
I think a lot of people don't understand. And if you didn't really truly know how a software company ran, right, and you walked in your offices, you might be, you know, surprised. But if you've ever run a software company or dealt with it or worked for a company like that, you know how they operate, have everything else, and you walk in and instantly go, okay, I get it. I know exactly what they got going on.
Right? For
this
sure.
I just think it's really naive, I guess, of the industry as a whole that you're doing something that's so radically different, and in reality, you're running a software company, which everything runs on software, and it's software first, right?
Absolutely.
Company, so that's how it started, right? And that makes a lot of sense for your organization.
I actually, you know, I sometimes look at the other side of things too. Mm-hmm. I look at how well we do certain things, and yet, you know, our competitors are still able to beat us sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I always go the other route. It's like, what do they have that we don't?
Right.
And what are we missing? As long as we think that way, I think we'll move forward properly. So yes, we do have wins, and they're quite, but our competitors still manage to, you know, outsell us sometimes. And so what do they have? Is it the sales rep? Is it the partner? Is it they've built a better situation here? They've been here longer. Their distribution channel's better. What do we need to improve to be able to make sure they don't catch up?
So this is kind of a loaded question. I'm
sure, go for it.
If you could rewrite one narrative about Verkada, what would it be?
I think it's still flawed in a lot of ways, and it's a simplified kind of structure of description of what Verkada is. But I think we do a great job at providing a lot of value to the customer. I do think that, you know, the software, once you stop paying a subscription, you expect it to stop working.
Right.
So I think that's
and,
just
and
not...
And that's with all software, not just security, right?
I mean, it has nothing to do with security,
It's if you stop paying the electric bill, the lights go off, right? Like, I mean, it's...
For sure.
Pretty straightforward.
And you know, I think there's always kernels of truth to, like, you know, well, could I use our cameras with another software, stuff like that, that are worthy of debating. But, you know, if you kind of have a problem with that, you probably have a problem with a lot of other products out in the market, unrelated to the industry as well. I ultimately believe that, like, you know, we build great products, we make sure that the software is worthwhile, we provide more value than what you originally bought for. And you know, our job is to make sure that value is great so that you want to buy more and more products. And from that standpoint, I would say, like, you know, we're becoming more and more interoperable, and there's no, that narrative is like kind of lost its luster.
But I think that that's ultimately another key to your success is the actual cross product line expansion, right? So they started with cameras, and it started using it, and then it went to guests, and it went to access control, and it went to environmental sensors or whatever. And then, you know, I think you guys have shared some data, some past events where how many customers today are using one product, using two, using three, using four, using five or more or whatever, right? It's pretty amazing, that trend.
It's very large.
Of how it's expanding. And
I think 100K plus customers, which are what we deem to be our core large customers, is 72% or something, and 70% have two or more products, which is remarkable.
That's awesome.
I think there's a lot that goes on to building that software, and that's why we have that license. It's not that simple.
Obviously, when you start a business and you join a team and everything else, like, you always have like ideas of grandeur of like where this ride's gonna take you. And you know, I think early on with Verkada, it was it's just another private equity firework, right? Light the fuse, it's gonna go up, make a bunch of noise, and goes out with bang, and then we don't ever hear about it, or it becomes something else. Somebody's trying to integrate into something else, and some private equity group bought it, right? I mean, that's kind of the thing. And then ultimately, you know, starts talking about, you know, potentially like, okay, yeah, that's over. I think, you know, ultimately you guys reached a point of critical mass where there was probably some of the industry players sniffing around on a potential acquisition. And
there were always rumors, and I don't know where they start.
Right.
I didn't hear them, you know what I mean?
And then ultimately you get to know we're gonna stick it out and go IPO and work towards, you know, going public and everything else. Those are some big decisions and steps along the way. And, you know, that's kind of the last of where it stood, is that, you know, potentially IPO at some point. Is that still, you think, the roadmap of the plan?
I think a lot of employees ask that question, more so than even the customers or the partners, is like, are you guys going to IPO? And I think it's important to understand the forces at play to understand whether we will. I do think that, like, the company size makes it very hard to be an acquisition target within the industry at this point.
Correct.
Like, there's very few companies that are, we're kind of like above that at this point.
Right.
Not saying it's not possible, but like, it's unlikely, right? So on the IPO front, you basically, I think there's two forces. So one is like employees and venture capital wanting to liquidate.
Right.
And that's like a real force. Fortunately for us, the VCs, you know, they still have time. They're on a larger time horizon, so they have time. Employees are getting a little more antsy nowadays. Yeah. And we, you know, we're on restricted stock units at this point, so there's a taxation event that's upcoming, and that's going to force us into this type of liquidation event or some other liquidation event, which could also be secondaries of some sort, tender offers. The opposing view is we still want to do long-term
planning. Yeah.
And investments and projects. Yeah. And we don't want to fall into a short-termistic play.
Which, if you're answering to shareholders and the market,
every quarter needs to be this and every quarter needs to be that. And I think internally also, we're still trying to figure out how to forecast our bookings properly, to make sure each team
is
ready.
Because now, if you don't book that, your SOX compliance got all kinds of issues.
And the stock won't rise and all that other stuff. So I think it's important. Now, there's the component that I believe in personally at this point, that we're kind of in this weird grayish zone where anyone who invests in Verkada from a private company standpoint, like if you're a VC, you're probably going to want a 2-3x once we IPO. And that's a hard thing to get.
Yeah.
And so you're going to value Verkada maybe a little lower than what it's actually worth. And so that's kind of another forcing function that might drive us to say, well, if we're going to raise again, we might as well raise from the public markets that will give us a better valuation. And so that's one little other like tweak
it's
that
tough.
Some people
it's a hard
don't understand.
I mean, and being able to not have to report at the way that you do as a publicly traded company is a big deal, right? And it's
also
a disruption to the business in general, because now you're essentially going to have accountants and other
accountants,
people who
auditing
just go through and
for
make sure that your paperwork's in line, right?
One thing I'll say is that we're pretty much close to ready. Mm. Like it's internally, we've kind of started building those functions, and predictability of revenue has started getting better lately. Yeah. And so I think we're getting close. Like I think our employees have heard that multiple times before.
Yeah.
It's like 18 months away or something like that. But I think like we're the size of an IPO company.
Yeah.
Like we are that size now. I don't know the exact timing, but those are the two forces that play.
Like you got to be like, you know, William Wallace and Braveheart and like trying to hold back the line, right?
You're just
screaming hold as long as you possibly can. You know,
every time that we don't mention in on an all hands, everyone's like, is it not happening anymore? Are we not going to that? Like, it's like, I think, by the way, I think IPO is not the end milestone.
Right.
There's so much more to go get after IPO.
Right.
And that's what I think people need to understand is that like, if we're lucky and we time it right, the IPO's success after the fact is just continuous, right? And it's like, we're growing, we should be growing at 30-40% year over year while remaining cash flow positive. That is the goal.
Right.
And if we could do that every quarter moving forward, then we're good. In order to do that, more product lines, as you can imagine, better efficiency of go-to-market, both in marketing and sales. And that will happen by moving more channel-centric, moving higher into enterprise, and eventually having international play a bigger part. So I think all of these are in the right direction right now.
Yeah.
I think we could improve on everything, but we're close. We're close.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
It's terrifying at the same time, right? I mean, I would say ultimately I'd love for you guys to stay private as long as possible, because you get to get away with more stuff. I mean, that's a fact, right?
Yes. And long-term investments, by the way, they're not always product related. Some of them is like, hey, let's split our sales team by hunters versus farmers. Let's so we can push this needle. And all these little like tweaks have risk associated with them.
They do.
And I would rather take that risk now. Right. So I'm sure the exec team thinks the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, we're a big company now. The numbers are starting to get big.
They are.
For sure.
And that recurring revenue from all that licensing just continues
the
to get
compounding
bigger,
right? Of it. Well, we're starting to see renewals.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that like I think most people don't understand. Even the VCs who look at our spread, they don't quite understand because it's so new.
Right.
We co-term, for the most part, although we just released actually potential licenses on a site-by-site level. But we co-term. And so as a company buys more of our products and more licenses, the expiration of that renewal, when that renewal needs to happen again, is pushed out.
Right.
So as a company that started selling in 2018, really, like about 7 years ago, we haven't seen really churn events and renewal events. This is the first year where that number is actually considerable. And our customers are renewing at a staggering rate, just the software side of it.
Yeah.
And that tells us like we might have another tailwind we didn't even know about. And it's also a new focus we haven't even focused about. Like, it's like, oh, how do we renew this? Like, you know?
Yeah. What's interesting is I think it's something that, you know, from my selfish perspective, is something that you really have to keep an eye on making that process easy for renewal. So we just went through, you know, personal experience, went through another manufacturer, and a global organization wanted to centralize all their licensing with us. We had done a lot of work for them, but we hadn't done everything across the globe. There was some stuff before we got involved. So time for renewal to get their account up. It was 3.5 months of my life of emails back and forth, executives teams to try to get the numbers right. Then there was a, you know, this product line was a private company that got bought. And so there was some private agreement up front that they were going to pay a different rate in perpetuity. So they had to go get the contract.
For sure. That's the biggest problem. It's like, what was the decision made back in the day? And can you as a partner now live with that decision?
So right. It's really, really hard to unbox all of that and get it right, and then get the licensing, depending on who the manufacturer is, if they will co-term or how they do their license renewals.
For sure.
It could be an absolute nightmare.
Nightmare.
And so as someone who's living through that, because as all of the industry moves to software as a service type solutions, the renewals become a real thing because we have to put a process in it. So like there'll be another one. Some manufacturers might give you 30 days notice. Some may just send you an invoice, right? And so you're like, I got an invoice with no purchase order coming in here. What's this for?
Yeah.
And you know, then it's like we had to start the process, which their procurement takes time and get through that.
Yeah.
So we've had to develop our own internal processes how to handle you know, the actual renewals, and each company does it differently. And it's a nightmare. So just keep that in mind.
Have you dealt with Verkada's renewals situation yet?
We have, yes. Okay. And it's definitely a much easier experience. It's just that, you know, enterprise and global business is messy, right? Because now you have a licensing that spans all kinds of territories and reps and all kinds of things. Just keep an eye on it. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah,
you like always have that in there because it is a truly painful thing. And now,
you have to deal with multiple manufacturers doing it differently. That for you, it's even more complex.
It is.
It's like a magnitude more complex.
It is. So much so that, you know, we internally have put together processes to where we take care of licensing renewals as part of one of our services for our customers to make it easy button for them.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways that we've been able to do that, to make sure that there's never a lapse, that we're always on top of it, that we get it taken care of and renewed properly. That's something that we've, you know, rolled into some of our other services because we've had to come up with a way to solve the problem, right, of this renewal coming up.
We've actually created a role just for that internally right now.
Yeah.
There's more work to be done. Hey, what do you think about the partner tools on command? Are they helping in general?
They are. I definitely like dealing with the partner team and what they're trying to do. I feel like, you know, you guys have come a long way with Channel in a very short amount of time. I'm also hypercritical that you got a long way to go.
For sure.
There's no doubt about that. I feel that, you know, they're... the partner tools, that whole channel team, they're still babies, like in the big picture of things. Because I mean, realistically, the channel program's really only been around a little over a year at this point, right?
The new one.
So I feel like, you know, there's definitely things going. I know I personally am involved in a lot of conversations. So I know that they're looking at a whole lot of different ideas and rewards programs and all kinds of things that they're trying to noodle through. And it's difficult because, you know, we've seen partner incentive programs that like came out from a manufacturer with a great idea. Like we're gonna put money back into the actual sales rep that generated the sales tool. We're gonna give them a credit card. We're gonna have this deal. Yeah. And then as part of their process, you have to have a copy of the original invoice. You have to have a copy of the purchase order. You have to submit all this paperwork in order to get a claim approved in order to get that. Well, internally, this means I had all my sales reps outside our accounts payable door trying to get copies of invoices so that they could go attach it so that they could. So I'm paying one of my employees
to solve for the problem.
A problem for an employee who's ultimately going to be compensated and the company's not, right? Yeah. Like it's one of those things.
It's an extra cost onto you, essentially.
Yeah. And so then it was like, help me understand this. And so then, you know, through that process, the claim is denied. And so I literally had the president of one of these manufacturers here, and I sat him down in my desk at there and said, we're going to process a claim. I want you to understand what this experience is. And so he went through like two of them, and you know, first one was rejected. And he's like, well, why was it rejected? I said, I don't know, but since you rejected it, I feel your invoice is invalid. So I also reject your invoice because you're not paying me whatever the promotional. And it's like, this is a nightmare. I'm like, now multiply that across however many salespeople you have in the organization and imagine what it is. And he's like, this is a nightmare. And so part of that is you got to look at what it is that you're rewarding drive change, because you may get an unintended consequence, right?
We sometimes forget that you guys sell multiple products, and the complexity of that thing that you just talked about is just magnified even further. If you had only sold one product, for example, like you could maybe deal with it, it'd still be painful, but now you got like, there's like five others, you know?
Right.
So painful.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. So we have a couple of former Verkada employees here.
Congrats.
That work. You know, obviously we talked to you guys about hiring them before we did and just steal them from Verkada. And it's been really interesting to hear their take, right? So lived, breathed Verkada inside and out for years and years and years. Leave, come back into the wild, right? And now have to learn the competitive intricacies of the competitive products, but then also what it takes to put together one of those proposals or how to present that and all the parts and pieces of that.
That are not Verkada specific.
That are not Verkada, right? Yeah.